Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
9:09, an hour left on this Thursday morning. We're joined by our friend Clancy Dubose, political editor and columnist for Gambit until the end of the year, and WWL TV political analyst. Clancy, how you doing?
I'm well, Tommy. How are you?
I'm good. We're going to talk about some politics, but I want to talk about you personally as well, because I think you got an interesting story, and I was not surprised to see your retirement. You announced your retirement. I was actually kind of glad for you, because I know you like to hunt and fish, right?
I sure do.
So we'll get into that a little bit and just tell you a story, because I think you're a Holy Cross graduate, old, bleed purple, gold, and green. Let me get to this real quick before we get to serious stuff. I was conducting a little survey earlier, and I grew up here, been here all my life. I would like to see the Plaza Tower. Look, I don't know anything about asbestos costs, anything else. I think it's part of the skyline of the city. I would like to see it stay there. Your thoughts just from an aesthetic viewpoint? There's no right or wrong.
You know, wasn't it the sort of the first skyscraper outside of the CBD, you know, downtown? They had the Hibernia building and the first NBC, et cetera. Those were the very first skyscrapers.
It was a big deal when they built it, yeah.
But it was the first modern. It was controversial. Is it going to stand up? You know, is there enough, you know, can this engineering-wise, et cetera? So in that sense, there's some history there, but I can tell you, I don't know the exact numbers, but I do know from on a very small scale having to deal with a building or two that had asbestos in it. Asbestos abatement is extremely expensive. It's very, very, very costly. And that, I think, has been the main prohibiting factor. Plus the age of the building being exposed to the elements. I don't know structurally what its condition is, you know, and maybe it's fine. It's an unknown. I think it's kind of a landmark, and if it could be preserved and if a developer could do it in a cost-effective basis, but, you know, developers, they have to make money.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm just talking about the aesthetics of it, if you would like to see it remain or not.
Yeah, I think aesthetically it would be an interesting addition, but it'd be interesting. It would be a good thing to maintain. Yeah, retention. Thank you. Retention would be a good part of our skyline.
Let's talk about.
But financially, it has to work.
Absolutely. Let's talk about mayoral race. Helena Moreno launched officially. What does history say about is there anything to, is each election separate and distinct, or is there anything to be gained from history about the first person announced or front runner, unknowns, all that stuff?
Well, it's, first of all, the overall lesson in politics that I've learned about elections comes from my mentor, Jim Carvin, who elected 6 mayors in a row as their, media advisor and strategist. And he taught me that every election is a unique event. Now, with that said, you can look at history and see trends. And this is an observation, not a prediction, number one. Two observations. Number one, when there is an open race for mayor, meaning no incumbent running, we tend to elect mayors under the age of 50. We've never, and going back all the way to Chep Morrison, and I think even before that, Robert Maestri, who was appointed mayor and then elected, mm-hmm. and that was in 1935 or so, 34, 35. You know, that's almost a century. We've never elected a mayor, male or female, over the age of 50. We've elected at least two of them in their 30s, Mark Morial and Chep Morrison. And a whole bunch of others, all the others, in their 40s. Mitch Landrieu, I think, was the oldest. He was pushing 50, but I think he was still 49 when he won the election. So, and they have been challenged by candidates who are older and more experienced and some would argue wiser, et cetera. But we tend to like youthful, energetic mayors when it's time to pick a new mayor, number one. Number two, there's a history going back a while that the early front runners don't necessarily win. But I would put an asterisk on that because Mark Morial and Mitch Landrieu didn't announce until very late in the game. And as soon as they announced, each was the prohibitive favorite. You know, is there somebody else out there like a Mark Morial or a Mitch Landrieu? I don't think so. You know, Ray Nagin came out, announced very late and came on and won. When LaToya Cantrell won, she wasn't the early front runner, but I'd put an asterisk on that because there were much more popular potential candidates who chose not to run. Mm-hmm. It was almost like the B team ran that time, the second string across the board. In terms of people who were well-known, and you know, had a real momentum behind them. So I would default to every election being a unique event. You can say, well, the early front runner, and Moreno is the early front runner. But, you know, right now she looks like a prohibitive favorite. But the race is almost a year away, and that's why we run the race, because candidates get tested, their mettle gets tested, their ability to think on their feet and their ability to communicate a winning message that resonates with voters and kind of inspires voters to believe in them and what they stand for and what they say they can do. This is the starting gate, and I wouldn't even say it's the starting gate because we only have one horse that's announced. It's more like she's the first horse out of the paddock onto the track. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Oliver Thomas is certainly thinking about it, and many people expect him to announce that he's running. Former Judge Arthur Hunter has been talking about it. There's been talk about State Senator Royce Duplessis possibly running, and there will most assuredly be others, some of them known, some of them not well known. We just have to wait and see. I think it's going to be early summer before we have a pretty good idea, and we won't have an absolute idea until qualifying closes.
You mentioned age. Helena Moreno's 47, Oliver Thomas 67. How important do you think that would be in this? Is that just a...
Well, that's up to the voters to decide. Mm-hmm. History tells us that we tend to, for the last almost century, for the last 90 years, New Orleans has preferred younger candidates. But that's just an observation. That's not a rule. It's going to be, again, the only thing that is absolutely true is that every election is a unique event. It's like a football game, and I don't mean to trivialize it, but you know, look at some of the upsets that occurred in recent weeks in college football, you know?
Well, you think you know until you line up, right? You think you know
exactly.
You line up, then you find out.
And it's the give and take. You know, Mike Tyson famously said, everybody has a plan until they get punched in the nose. Mm-hmm. You know, so when they line up and they start hitting each other, you know, legally on the line of scrimmage, and when these candidates get up and they start taking shots at each other and being criticized, having people shoot at them metaphorically with attacks and criticisms, we got to see how they hold up. You know, and it's all about, at the end of the day, it's all about who and what resonates with voters.
Let's talk about gender and race. Where does any of that fit into this historically?
I don't think gender matters. You know, LaToya Cantrell broke the gender line, broke through that glass ceiling. I don't think the fact that the present mayor happens to be a woman and her voter approval is very low, I don't think that works against Moreno. I don't think people are saying, oh, a woman can't do this job. I don't hear that at all. So I don't think gender is a factor. I think experience matters more than anything, and I think a person's record matters. And I think they're looking for somebody who's going to represent the city well, and there's lots of ways to do it. It's not just cosmetic. It's also about presence and the ability to deliver a message that represents to the rest of the state and the rest of the country, you know, a positive image of New Orleans. And then I think the each candidate's platform, you know, we all know what the problems are. What are you going to do about them, and how are you going to do it? Exactly what's it going to cost us? And what's your timetable? Who's on your team? You know, endorsements matter a little bit. They don't make all the difference in the world, but they do matter because endorsements tend to lend credibility. It depends on who's doing the endorsing, but you know, but they're like sort of a stamp of approval. And it's not about the old political organizations don't matter nearly as much as they used to. I mean, they would rank toward the bottom of endorsements. But I think, you know, the minister's endorsement matters. And I think, some of the groups and business leaders and other elected officials matter. People who have high approval ratings among voters, if they stand up and say, I'm for this candidate or that candidate, and how they deliver that and how it's used, I think that matters. It doesn't guarantee an outcome, but I think it tells voters, look, I vouch for this person. If you trust me, then I hope you will trust me when I say that, you know, candidate X or candidate Y is somebody who should be our next mayor. It just gives voters a more sort of a comfort level, but that's all it does. And a candidate can always blow it in a debate or by, you know, something coming out about them that displeases voters. So, you know, those things are fragile. It takes a long time to establish a reputation, but you can lose it real quickly, let's say. And that happens in a campaign sometimes.
Let me take a break. I want to talk about money when we come back, about what, you know, sure, what role that plays in this and who in the city has the deep pockets when it comes to money and what they could be looking for in the next mayor of New Orleans. And also a big question, Clancy, I think is, who would want the job? My gosh, in heaven. And are they running against LaToya? Because not literally against her, but because the bar she set is pretty low,
that,
right?
That often happens, yes.
So uh-huh. Is that the deal? Or then?
I think whenever a mayor, at the end of a mayor's two terms, that mayor's record, they tend to look, I call it the pendulum effect, look for somebody different.
Mm-hmm.
But the axis of the pendulum is sometimes it's race. Sometimes it might be gender. Sometimes it might be policies or politics. I don't know what the axis is going to be, but they're going to look for somebody not like LaToya.
Yeah, I would think behavior and might be the axis.
How are they? No, but in what way do they want somebody different? Do they want somebody who's a man? Do they want somebody who's more experienced, who projects better? Or, you know, mm-hmm. I'm not sure what the axis is going to be, but there's going to be somebody not like LaToya who's the next mayor.
Let me open the phone lines here, the text line at least, 504-260-1870. Sure. What are y'all looking for in the next mayor of New Orleans? If you want the anti-LaToya, what would that look like? Somebody who does...
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
What? Somebody who can accomplish what? Text in, and we'll continue the conversation with Clancy Dubose when we come back. Our friend, political editor, columnist for Gambit, WWL-TV political analyst, 921-WWL. Talking to Clancy Dubose, our good friend, political editor, columnist for Gambit, soon to be retired. You could still be with WWL-TV, Clancy?
Yeah, you know, that's... It's one day a week on my Tuesday commentary at 6 o'clock news, and it just takes a few hours, so it's easier to do, and it's kind of predictable in terms of the hours. I've always been in print. Once I started at the Times Picayune in May of '73, I was never not in print somewhere. Most of that time, I was in Gambit. But I started at the Picayune, and I ended at the Picayune and at Gambit. So it was a nice full circle, you know, coming full circle on my career. And I was grateful at that. Very grateful to John and Dethel Georges for giving me that opportunity. And grateful to all of the folks that I've worked with on the editorial board at the Picayune, and even a lot of the reporters I've gotten to interact with in terms of, you know, researching while I was writing things and editing things on the editorial board, which is really the editorial department. And it's been a wonderful experience. I've had a good ride, and I hope I'm going out at or near the top of my game. And, you know, I don't want to wait till I'm sort of punch drunk and people are rolling their eyes when I write something. So I can get out now, and I'm in good health, and my wife and I are going to do some traveling, but we're just going to enjoy spending more time with each other and with our granddaughter, Ava, and our two sons and daughters-in-law. And I'm going to do some more hunting and fishing. So I spent some time in Montana and all that. So it's going to be good.
That is the gold of life. You know that. Somebody texted in here, Clancy, about we want someone who will be, first of all, to digress for a moment. I can't believe you're 70.
Sure.
You got this baby face. Well, I always thought you were like 50 years old, honestly.
Well, I tell people if you saw my MRI, you'd swear I was 90.
Yeah. All right. So somebody texted, what, you got knee trouble or what?
Lumbar issues, okay. But they're manageable. I have a wonderful pain doc, and one thing I'm going to do, I'm going to get back in the gym.
Yeah,
that's my pre-New Year's resolution. I want to start before the new year. So
that's the trick.
Anyway,
start a couple of weeks.
Yeah,
before
stay
the
healthy.
Year. Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
So here we go. Tougher on crime and woke. Someone like the police chief, says another text, has a heart for the city to move forward, but I don't know how you define that. Somebody who is not in it for themselves, somebody who didn't suck up to Cantrell, a mayor that works full-time and is not out of town on frivolous trips spending taxpayer money. We want a mayor, says this text, who can accomplish something, anything, and talk to us on a regular basis, like a weekly Roosevelt-type fireside talk. So, Clancy, who would want the job? I was having a conversation with somebody yesterday about Jason Williams, and would he be interested, but the DA is a far better job than is the mayor, right, for a bunch of reasons?
Well, in some ways, yes. The DA, first of all, doesn't have term limits. The DA runs every 6 years rather than every 4 years. The DA has much more budgetary autonomy, although part of the DA's budget comes from the city. And the DA gets to, if he or she chooses, can play the tough on crime, but also, you know, reasonable and, you know, doesn't have to fix the streets and deal with other deals as part of the criminal justice system. But the DA has to interface and work very closely with the police department. And that matters. So in that sense, it helps for the DA and the mayor to be on the same page so that the mayor, whoever he or she may be, appoints a police chief who, you know, can work with the DA's office and, you know, all of that. But and the DA can also have outside employment. The mayor cannot. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think Jason Williams has found the spot that he wants. He's sort of grown into that. You know, he ran as a very liberal progressive, and now he's sort of back in the middle. He recognizes that it's an adversarial system. The DA's job isn't to be a social worker, it's to be the prosecutor. Our system of justice is an adversarial system. The DA is there to represent the victims and the citizens. The defense attorney is there to represent the defendant. The judge is there to be the referee, and the jury is the fact finder. So that's, everybody plays a role in this. And I think he's learned what his role is. He has narrowed his lane, and he is focusing more on advocating for the victims and prosecuting, and that is his job, build the case and prove it in court. We'll see. You know, he's going to be up for re-election in 2 years, so we'll see what happens then. But in the meantime, we've got a mayor's race. I want to point out one thing. Yeah. I heard a sort of a common thread in those texts you read. Mm-hmm. If you think about it, how much of that was they were saying somebody not like LaToya,
yep.
Right? Almost universally, right? But there were different ways. Some of them were like, have their heart for the city, meaning, you know, LaToya's not from New Orleans, but we've had mayors before who were not from New Orleans. Chet Morrison, Vic Sciro, you know, good mayors who were not born and raised here. But we've also, but they came here and they got the city. And I'm not sure that LaToya Cantrell, I've said it, I don't think she truly gets New Orleans. She talks like she gets it, but I don't think she does. And then there's the travel thing. And I was unable to attend Helena Moreno's announcement yesterday because I was in a dentist chair. Mm. But I did read what was, you know, Gambit had a quick account of it. And she, one of the things that she hit hard in her message, a point that she drove home, was that she was going to be a 24/7 mayor. And the implication there is I'm not going to be traveling a lot. You know, so clearly the polling shows that that's one of the things that really resonates in a negative way that LaToya Cantrell does. All this traveling and, you know, sort of acting, kind of looking like she's disengaged. And Ray Nagin was guilty of that, too. You know, he would go to breakfast till 10 a.m. and then take long lunches. And, you know, and that would be fine if this, everything was going well. People don't mind the mayor traveling when everything is going well. But when things are not going well, they want the mayor's presence here. And then the talking to people, you know, the fireside chat reference. Yeah, they want a mayor who's going to be out there in the community, that someone they can see and touch, shake that person's hand, give him or her a hug even, but hear from them directly, you know, communicate. So, and I think that was part of what Moreno talked about yesterday in her announcement.
That sounded a little bit like Mitch Landrieu, what you were describing just now, maybe?
Yeah, well, that was Mitch. Yeah. You know, he understood, you know, because Nagin wasn't all that present, right? You know, they don't want a mayor who's going to go into the bunker mode just because things are tough. So
let me talk about money before
we
run out of time here,
sure.
And how important that's going to be, and who has the money in the city that could make a difference, or outside of the city, I don't know, and what they would be looking for in a mayor.
Well, the old saying, money's the mother's milk of politics, but it doesn't always absolutely define who the mayor will be in terms of who wins. You know, LaToya Cantrell was not the most well-financed candidate. She was the best organized. She had a campaign team that was phenomenal. And, you know, so we'll, but money matters, you know, because you got to get your message out there, and it takes a really good, focused team to get that message out, and it has to be a message that resonates. So it's a lot of, there's no single thing that defines it, but money sure helps. In terms of where it comes from, a lot of it comes from city contractors, and that's not unusual. It's happened. That's everywhere in America, okay? You know, business community, people who do business with the city, and then concerned citizens who aren't looking for something. They just, you know, believe in the city and they want to contribute. There are people outside the city who love the city and who just like, you know, want to see New Orleans succeed, and they will donate. So there's not just one pot. There are a number of pots out there. But first of all, you got to have money to give money. Okay, so it's going to be people who tend to be well off and in business or in professions. And, you know, there's a pretty identifiable pool out there. There are lists that are out there that, you know, you can just look at the campaign finance reports from the last 15 years in New Orleans, and you'll see a lot of the same names, companies and individuals who give. Some of them do business with the city. Some of them just care about the city, not just care, but they care deeply about the city and are not looking for an appointment or a job or work, but It's a mixed pool of individuals who have a stake in the city. I think it's wealthy people who feel a real commitment to and stake in the city and the success of the city.
So let me ask you this real quick before we run out of time. Who would want really to be mayor, and how do you go about eating that elephant even one bite at a time? How do you start? What are the big challenges the new mayor is going to face, and how do they go about attacking him or fixing what's wrong?
Well, if you look at the two mayors, let's look at it from a a reverse, or I hate to say negative, but a negative point of view. Look at the two mayors who were judged harshly by voters, LaToya Cantrell and Ray Nagin. They were kind of outsiders. And that doesn't mean an outsider can't go in and do a good job, but what it really takes is someone with a team. You know, look at the mayors who succeeded. Mitch Landrieu came in and he brought a team with him. Mark Morial brought a team with him. Sidney Bartholomew, Dutch Morial, Moon Landrieu. They had people who knew what they were doing. You know, this is not an easy job. In fact, my friend James Carville once said, and I've hung on to that, outside of President of the United States, being mayor of a major American city, which New Orleans certainly is, is the most difficult job in politics.
Wow.
It really is, because there's never enough money to solve all the problems. And to me, what I look for in a mayor, I look for somebody who knows what the most important word in a mayor's vocabulary is.
Which is?
That word is no. You got to be able to say no, not just to your adversaries, but you got to be able to say no to your friends without making them stop be your friends. And that's, you go ask Mitch or Mark or Sidney, and they'll tell you, the three living former mayors who are you know, held in high regard, they'll all tell you, that's the toughest part of the job. It's the most important word in a mayor's vocabulary. You got to be able to say no and say it sweet enough that you don't alienate somebody. Because you sometimes you've, and Dutch Morial taught me something. He said, man, in this business, it's not your enemies you got to watch out for, it's your friends. They'll do you in every time because they want too much. And
right.
then they, you know, and a lot of wisdom in that. A lot of wisdom.
We got to go, but do you have any wild cards for us and any names that you're hearing out there that might be a surprise?
Oh, I know one who's definitely not running. Me.
You, yeah.
I don't want
you're
that
done.
Job.
Who would want it, really?
I'm done,
I mean,
baby.
That's tough.
Stick a fork in me.
There you go.
No, I've never run for anything, and I won't. But I care deep. I live in the city. Both my sons and daughter-in-law and future daughter-in-law and their parents live in the city. So we're my whole extended family is anchored here. And, you know, I care as much as anybody. And I'm going to sit back and watch, you know, like every other voter should do, you know. I would say, you know, it's okay to form an opinion early, but it's okay to be open to changing, too. Just hold everybody to a high standard and see who offers us the best hope. I think we're a city founded on faith, sustained on hope, and thriving with love. The three Christian values, and I don't mean to preach Christianity, but faith, hope, and love are the anchors, the cardinal virtues, you know. And New Orleans needs a whole lot of faith, hope, and love.
Amen. Thank you,
Clancy. And somebody who can do that should make a good mayor.
We'll talk to you again. Thank you, sir. Appreciate your time. Have a Merry Christmas. Happy New Year to you.
You too, and to all your listeners.
Thank you, sir. Clancy Dubose, political editor and columnist for Gambit, WWL-TV political analyst. When we come back, we're going to talk with Troy Duon from Giving Hope about the Aspiring Scholars Program and how you can help. And this is a pretty interesting thing. When we come back, 941 Traffic, WWL.